accession number 23186, Reel 5.
Mr. Walker, Reel 5. Before we go on, I'd like to ask you about some of the key people on the ship. And it started, of course, with the captain, Lieutenant Commander Harry Hills. Now, what was he like?
Lieutenant Commander Hills, he was an RNR officer. And he was aged about 40, as far as I presume. And he was a very good officer as regards seamanship. You could tell exactly that he was used to being in command, and he was in command. Whatever he wanted, he got, and that was it. And he was very fair, and he was very fair to me. He did insist, he always called me yeoman, and he did insist, quite rightly, that I should be on the bridge every time he was on the bridge at sea. And I came in contact with him a lot.
Was he popular? Because we'll come on to your routine. Was he popular with the men?
As far as I know, yes. I didn't hear any a bad word against him.
What about the first lieutenant? That'd be Ian Bamford.
No, he was a different kettle of fish.
In what way?
He wasn't well liked at all. He was a South African. He was a lieutenant. A regular officer. And I never had a good word said about him by the ship's company, because he was very strict, he was very hard, and he did keep them on their toes, which is probably a good thing. I mean, he is a first lieutenant, after all, and he's responsible to the captain for the good running of the ship.
Now, any other officers that you remember by name or type?
Yeah, there was my signal officer.
Who was he?
He was a sub-lieutenant at the time. Sub-lieutenant Harry Bradbear.
Harry?
Bradbear. That's B-R-A-D-B-E-A-R. One word.
What was he like?
Harry was very good. He was a survivor twice before he joined the Burgess. It was rather funny, really. I forget the name of the ship he was on that was torpedoed. And he was picked up by another destroyer, and that was torpedoed the same day. So he was a survivor twice in the same day. But he was very good. As I say, he was my signal officer.
What sort of a relationship did you have with him? I mean, how did you...
Well, I was very close with all the officers, in as much as I kept them up to date. Like, first thing in the morning, 9 o'clock, captain's probably at breakfast. I take the previous day's signals, and I show them to him, and he reads them, and any replies he wants to make. I might say to him, "Would you like to reply to this one, sir?" And he'd say, "Oh, yes, I will do." And he'd write down the signal, and I would take it down. And of course, I was with him for some time. And then the same with all the other officers. Any signals I received during the day, I made sure they were shown to the officers concerned. But the captain may be away for the day if the ship was ashore, and he would only see his signals all at one batch on the following morning. And of course, I stamped them all and made sure they initialed them to make sure they'd seen them.
Now, what about any other officers that you've got? Any others come to mind?
There was one. He was a sub lieutenant, Ashton, but I believe he was a dental officer in Civvy Street, but. I didn't have much to do with him.
Now, what about any other key people you knew or on board ship? You know, I mean, petty officers or leading seamen or leading signals. I mean, you were the leading signaler, but I mean, was there anyone else who comes to mind?
Yeah, the P-Hotel, he was a petty officer, Alfie Orr.
Alfie?
Orr. or double R. He was very good in the WT room.
What was he like?
He was a Liverpudlian, very, very nice chap. He was much older than me, and as much as he was a three badge, he'd had some service then when the war started, you know, when the war was on.
What was his job as Petty Officer Telecommunicator?
Well, running the wireless telegraphy room.
It stood for telegraphy, not telecommunications.
Yeah, telegraphy. And he had people taking down listening to Morse code, you know, all the time. And the coders were also under him, coders. But decoded any signals in code and things like that.
Now, while you were at Bermuda working up trials, they had quite a dramatic abandoned ship exercise. Well, a lot of the ships did anyway. Do you remember that?
Yeah, it was just abandoned ship, and that was it. Over the side. And
did you actually go over the side?
Oh, yeah. Bamford made sure that everybody went. You know, oh, yeah, nobody was excused.
How realistic was it?
Well, it was pretty realistic, yeah. Just it was there without anything. You just got the order, abandoned ship, and that was it.
And the other thing, there was one of the soldiers was killed in a road accident.
That's later on. I'm coming to that.
Okay. So, anything else about the trials you remember?
They were very severe. They were very.
In what way?
Well, you did it over and over and again till it was absolutely right. And being in the warm weather in Bermuda, it was a full day.
What sort of trials do you mean?
Well, there'd be speed trials, gunnery trials, so depth charge trials.
And how good were the crew when they started, and how much did it improve them?
Well, I'm not sure, because I was only on the bridge, and had nothing to do with seamanship at all. So what they were actually like, whether they were green, or some, obviously some are experienced, because they had badges, like, and different things. So, but they gradually got moulded into a very good crew. And I forget how long we spent doing that at Bermuda. It must have been about a month, I suppose, 5 weeks.
And did you get ashore at all?
There was shore leave, but I never went.
Why not? Why wouldn't you take shore leave?
I don't know. I had nothing to go for. And I was more interested in getting my department into shape.
Now, how did you go about getting your department into shape? Because you mentioned it earlier, but you didn't really tell us how you went. Because your signallers were inexperienced, weren't you?
Well, yeah. To make sure I got my full complement of confidential signal books, for a start.
Now, what were the confidential signal books? Can you just explain what they are for people?
Well, they're books that are the same right throughout the Navy. And each ship has a set. And they're obviously come from the Admiralty. And as you can well imagine, they're very secret books. And I had to have a safe welded to the bulkhead to keep them in. And there was only two keys. There was the signal officer and myself. So I had to get all that sorted out in order. And then I'd also to worry about these three young signalmen I had. Only one I'd ever been to sea before.
Now, how did you manage that? How did you take them? How did you try and bring them on?
Well, I had to give them flag hoisting training, and I had to give them Morse training, well, reading, make sure they kept up their semaphore drill, doing semaphore, and running the department when we were in harbour, taking signals over the phone, because it was all, there was no visual signals while you were in harbour. It was all telephone work. So, and things like that. So, I just never got round to going ashore.
Did they respond well to your training? I mean, were they good lads?
Yeah, they were very good. Very good. But when we actually got to sea, especially during, even during the training, at Bermuda, they were seasick, and you'd grab, to hold them in to find them, you know, and get them in, into watchkeeping routine. But
so what happened next after Bermuda? That was roughly speaking around about June.
Yeah, that's right. Well, we left
July.
We left and went up the coast to a place called Argentia in Nova Scotia, and it was there that during a run ashore, our leading cook met with an accident and was killed.
What kind of accident was it?
A car accident. He was hit by a car. Now, whether he had a few drinks or not, I don't know. It was dark, and when the accident happened, and it was a very sad time, obviously. I don't know what we did for a replacement.
Did you have the tradition of auctioning their belongings? I mean, that was an old naval tradition when someone died, you know, before...
Yeah, well, if there was, I didn't know anything about it.
And so, what happened? Anything else happened at Argentia?
Well, not a lot, really. We were just waiting there, sort of kicking our heels, and we eventually picked up a convoy, slow convoy, for the trip across the Atlantic to England. And that was nothing very much happening. It was slow. The usual U-boat dropped a few depth charges here and there, but nothing untoward. And it was only...
What was the... How did you... I mean, were you getting used to the rolling? During, you know, it's plenty of time. You're a fair while.
Yeah, it never worried me. Never worried me. But some people it obviously did. And I think the biggest roll we recorded was 57 degrees. Because we had a meter on the wall of the chart house that recorded any, you know, how far you went over. Like, but that was all right.
Then what happened when you got there?
Where?
To Belfast. Well, you went to Belfast.
Yeah, well, this is it. I'm saying we came across the Atlantic, and of course there's all sorts of rumours going round where we're going to be based and this stuff. And they kept asking me in the Pier Hotel, you know, had we heard anything? And they said Liverpool and this, that, and the next. But, well, after about a fortnight, I think, they said, your base will be Belfast. So, we left the convoy and the off the coast of Ireland, you know, where it was pretty safe, and came into Belfast.
Now, what was the Pollock Dock area like? Can you describe it there?
Yeah, it was quite a big area, and it had a shore base there at HMS Caroline, which was an administrative base with officers and signal staff.
Was that on the old light cruiser? I mean...
Caroline, yeah. Yeah, it was in dry dock there, cruiser, but there was also buildings around it. But it was there that I took my examination for Yeoman of Signals.
Now, tell me about the examination and how you passed it, if you did.
Well, yeah, it was an all-day job from early in the morning, and it was all written, mostly written papers. And then there was an actual interview, being asked questions, given replies. And
how difficult was it, and how much revision did you have to do?
Well, being a leading signalman, I knew a fair bit, although I say it myself, because I'd been and did the course at the signal school at Portsmouth. And it's very intense there. You go right through every bit. So really, for being a yeoman of signals, it's only a little extension of that, which you should know the basics anyhow. Either you know it or you don't. So, as I say, it was an old day job. And the upshot was, so you come away, you don't know it there and then. But I think it was about a week later when the captain, Harry Hills, gave me the good news and congratulated me.
Now, did they actually promote you to yeoman, or did you just pass the exam?
No, I was promoted. So, and even Bamford, the first lieutenant, came up to me and said, "Well done," so which was quite a thing for him. So then you put in a request and to be promoted to Petty Officer, Yeoman of Signals. And you go in front of the captain, you know, the captain's table, and he's granted. And, of course, you move messes then. You go in the Petty Officer's mess.
Now, what was the Petty Officer's mess there?
Well, it was very good. Size, about this size, full size, and it had bunks. How many was there? Not too many. About a dozen, I suppose.
It was about 20 foot by 10?
Yeah, a dozen petty officers on the for the whole ship. There was the buffer, which was the main seaman, and the torpedo department. And all the coxswain, all the different ones. And it was very good for me.
Did you have more room?
And you had two messmen. You didn't have to do anything about your meals. When you came down, your meal was put in front of you.
Was it better food?
Well, no, just the same. But it was prepared and presented better, you know, and... the messmen gave you a tot, you know, when you come in. They did everything for you. Of course, you rewarded them in different ways. They were excused general duties, as it, you know, they were just looking after the POs and the mess. But I never had to sleep there, although I had a bunk and a locker. I never slept in the mess because while I was at sea, it was fully booted and spurred in the chart house with the skipper. And when I was in harbour, I was always ashore. So,
what would you do ashore? What was your job as yeoman ashore?
What? No, this was just done.
You just go ashore?
Yeah,
recreationally?
Recreation, yeah. Nothing to do with being a yeoman.
So what would you do when you went ashore at Pollock Dock?
Well, I went ashore, and as I said last time, I met my wife there, who was a nurse. And after that, I used to meet her, and we may go dancing, or we may go to the cinema, or we may... just go for a run out in the country, on the tram or the bus. Have a walk round and come back. But nothing special.
Were you aware of any of the sectarian problems, you know?
Not then. And...
would you sleep ashore?
Yeah, I did. When after a few weeks, I stayed with my future wife's family, you know. And... came back in the morning, like. And Harry Hills was very good to me, because if the ship, we were just going on the Naples run then.
Now, hang on, before you start the...
I'm just going in passing.
Okay.
That if the ship was sailing, say, at 8 o'clock in the morning, there was no all-night leave for the ship's company. but Harry Hills always gave it to me. Which must have been a big risk for him. If I hadn't come back, he was in trouble. But I was always back early, 6 o'clock in the morning, and the quartermaster always put it in his report, yeoman on board. You see, so, and of course I reported to the captain and that I was back, all ready for duty.
Now, when you were there, were you attached to an escort group at the start? Cause I think you were attached to 4th, because you weren't meant to be in 4th, but you were sort of attached to it for a while, weren't you? Well, what do you remember of your duties before you went on the Naples run, the sort of work you were doing with 4th Escort Group?
Well, as far as I know, we were the 4th Escort Group. Always. And we were always in the same group, doing convoy work, mainly in the Atlantic.
Now, what do you remember of that?
Very tedious. Very tedious. No action, apart from the 2 or 3 submarine scares.
What about the time when you went into the Bay of Biscay area, and there's quite a bit of there were air attacks and a lot of submarines about in the bay?
Oh, that was in the Naples run for the troop ships. But apart from that, never did any damage or anything like that. And of course, these troop ships are so fast. We used to pick them up off the north coast of Ireland.
Well, tell me about that, because you remember them better, don't you? Tell us about they were called KLM, weren't they?
Yeah.
Convoys. Tell us about the KLM convoys.
Well, they were pure and simply troop ships. And some would come out from Liverpool, some would come from Greenock, and we'd rendezvous off the north coast of Ireland. And we'd go with them, as I say, fast, 20-odd knots, down the west coast of Ireland, down the west coast, France, Bay of Biscay, down to Gibraltar, through the Med. And when we got to south of Sardinia, some split. Some went to Naples. Others were picked up and carried on to the Far East, like. And we took the, I forget how many of us, took the Naples ships up to Naples. And it was a case of being there for 2 or 3 days. I went ashore there, but it was very, nothing to write home about. Bit slummy, I thought. You could see Vesuvius and Capri and different places like that. Didn't have much to do with the locals. And then after about 4 or 5 days, we'd refuel, of course, while we were there, and reprovision and everything. And then pick up another lot for home. And we'd rendezvous with some coming from the other end of the Med and take them back, same route, in reverse, back to the north of Ireland. And then we'd come into Belfast, and that went on and on and on.
Now, this went on for the best part of a year, from late in 43 right through to December 44.
That's right.
Do you remember anything that happened? I mean, you remember the Bay of Biscay conflict, which I'm not sure was part of the KLM, but whatever it was...
Probably wasn't.
But do you remember the fighting in the Bay of Biscay at all?
Not really. It doesn't spring to mind.
Anything you do remember from that? It's a long time to be on the same backwards and forwards convoys.
Yeah, well, it just... One of those things, Peter, you know, you did it, you got on with it, and...
Were you pleased to be on a
by
a
this
fairly
time, I had more staff,
one.
Which was a good thing for me. I had more staff. I had a good leading signalman, and...
What was his name, and what was he like?
He's just died, as a matter of fact. He was a tall... I always called him Lofty. Lofty Watson. And he was quite a big noise in the city. And he lived at Chislehurst after the war. And Jim Edwards was very friendly with him. He went to see him a lot after the war. And I got on very well with him. He was good.
Well, how did you share the duties with him? Because, you know, you'd been leading seaman, sort of acting yeoman. Now you were yeoman. You had your
right.
own lead.
Well, I used to,
how did you share the...
I passed duties that I unknown to him. And they did it. And then we also had more signalmen, and they were more experienced. So we were, well, exactly there as a moulded team, like. And they all knew their job, what was expected of them. And I knew what was expected of me. And so it was a, really, it was a humdrum experience, Peter, really, on these fast troop ships. Yeah, I mean, there was always plenty to do and see, signal-wise. And
so what sort of signals would you get? Can you give us an idea of the type of signals you'd get on a KLM convoy, say, or any routine?
Visual signals.
Any signal, yeah. Visual signals. You were visual, weren't you?
Yeah, that's right. So you get visual signals.
What sort of thing would they be?
And the only ship that you'd get any signals from would be the commodore of the convoy, which is always the senior officer of the convoy. And any signals between the escort and him would be it. I mean, we wouldn't be in communication with any other ship.
And what sort of signals would he send?
Well, he might say, I suggest we alter course to so-and-so and so-and-so. And just test signals like that. Or if there was any U-boat trouble, you kept them up to date about that. Submarine packs or anything like that. But they didn't worry us so much because we were going so fast, we were doing zigzags, timed zigzags, and you need to be very unlucky for be in the path of a U-boat.
Now, any other duties you had? I mean, when you were at Naples or in Belfast, were you responsible for upkeeping the charts at all as you?
No. That was a different department.
So any other
the navigating officer, Hector O'Neill, McNeill, I beg your pardon.
What was he like?
Very good. He was a real Scotsman. But he was an educational man. And I believe he was a very good teacher after the war. And he used to play his bagpipes. And, of course, every time when we left harbour, or come into harbour, he'd don his kilts and play his bagpipes as the ship came into harbour. Very good. And he was a very good officer, very nice.
What was so good about him?
Well, just his general demeanour and the way he treated people. And I met him, how many years ago? 4 years ago at one of our reunions at Melbourne. And he hadn't changed much from what I remember him on the Burgess. Well, to me, he was very good because I dealt a lot with him, being his yeoman of signals, as it were.
You were acting yeoman, yeah.
Acting yeoman then, but although I hadn't passed for yeoman, I was still a leading signalman.
And what do you mean he was
good
to you?
But he always called me yeoman.
In what way, how did he treat you that was well?
Well, we're getting on later on in the...
Okay, all right, well, we'll perhaps come back. Now, what about the first lieutenant, I think, was Ian Bamford. What was he like?
Well, he was a South African. And I must say, he wasn't a popular officer on the ship.